Production. Recorded live.
You're listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. It's 9 o'clock on a Tuesday. Yes, it's time for the Geocaching Podcast. Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast. Welcome to the show. If you're new to the show, I'd like to say welcome to the show. It's good to meet you. I'm Andy, or XPunkX. I am part of the XPunkX and Jewels team. And if you've listened to this show before, well, welcome back. I'm glad to see you here again. This show is aired and recorded live Tuesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you're listening to the stream, then you're already here and you know what it's all about. If you want to be on the show today, please call 724-444-7444, and the TalkCast ID is 7525. Join us live. We'd love to have you here live. What happens when you're live? Well, you can text chat with us. You can text chat with other listeners who are listening. You can call into the show live. You basically shape what this podcast is about. If you want to call in and you want to talk about anything geocaching, if you have any questions or comments, we get them on the show. That's the best way to get them on the show. All you have to do is go to talkshoe.com, sign up for a free PIN number. It's free, it's easy, and your information won't be sold to anyone, and you can just call in and join us whenever. All you have to do is call that number, 724-444-7444, and enter the TalkCast ID 7525, put in your PIN, and you're on the show. Real simple, real easy. If you're not a subscriber to this podcast, please subscribe by going to geocachingpodcast.info. You'll find all the feeds there, you'll find our show notes, you'll get every episode downloaded to your iPod, to your computer, as soon as it's published. You'll also find show notes about everything we've talked about on this podcast, links, everything like that. So during the week also, if you want to call in with any stories or any other information regarding geocaching or the Geocaching Podcast, call 206-350-3GPS, 206-350-3GPS, and that will get you to our voicemail where you can leave us a message and we'll play it on the podcast if you're out doing first to find hunts, or, you know, just in general, just want to talk to or leave a message for this podcast during the week, you can do that. So, how'd you guys like the Dressel Dragons interview last week? It's kind of cool. I like hearing from other geocachers. It's kind of cool to be able to just meet them and get to hear a little bit more about who they are, what shapes them, and what they like as a geocacher. I really like hearing them. If you want to be interviewed on this podcast, we would love to have you. You can do that. You can contact us by a couple different ways. All of our contact is on the geocachingpodcast.info website, but you can email xpunkx, that's xpunkx, at geocachingpodcast.info, or call 206-350-3GPS, leave your contact information there, and tell us that you want to be on the show, and we'll get you on the show. We'll put you on the schedule. That way you can kind of tell the world who you are and who you are as a cacher. So this last weekend, my wife and I, Jules, and my son, Micah Boy, were up in Detroit. We live in Indiana. We live in northern Indiana. My wife had a scrapbooking meet that she was going to in Detroit. And she said, hey, you know, want to come? Whoa, I don't really do scrapbooking, but it'd be a great time for me and our son, Micah Boy, to go out and do some caching. So we actually contacted, while we were there, we contacted Daryl W4 and Firefly 03 of the Cache Minix podcast, and we had lunch with them on Saturday, got to meet them. Be looking forward for them. They will be actually on our podcast hopefully next week. We'll be talking a little bit next week about planting a event cache and more about how to do that. Daryl W4 and Firefly 03 do that a lot. They have their Coffee Coins and Sigs events. I myself have only planted one event cache. We've only hosted one event cache. So I wanted to get a little bit more information from people who actually have planted more and done more event caches. So I talked to them a little bit, and they said that they would be on the show next week. So look forward to them. We will be talking about how to plant a event cache. So back onto our caching stories for this weekend. Well, I downloaded all of the waypoints into my GPS for like the whole surrounding Detroit area. I went ahead and a lot of caches, and I'm still doing paper caching, and so I had like a lot of paper that I was gonna. Let's do some caching, and I get to Detroit and went out with Micah, and he's in a stroller still. We went to this one geocache, and it's called Mount Wixom Cache. It's rated a 5.5, and it's a story cache, but it's not really a 5.5. Like, they play it off on the page like it's a mountain and you have to climb it and people die and it's all crazy and you're supposed to make up this huge story and how you find it and all that stuff like that. It was all right. It was a good cache. I mean, it was an ammo container. It wasn't a micro. It was a good cache. I mean, it really was. It was in the woods and it was nice. What I didn't like though is the 5.5 cache. Those of us who are all about the numbers, we don't really want a 5.5 cache in our numbers when it's not really a 5.5 cache. So that was kind of interesting. I got to it. I was reading the cache page actually on my phone. I didn't have that cache page printed out, and so I went to it on my phone. I'm like, this is a 5.5 cache, and okay. And why do I all about mountains? There's no mountains here. In fact, it's completely flat. So I mean, I amused them. I went ahead and put in my story about how we hiked up the side, and it was a good thing that Michael was in his four-wheel drive utility vehicle, which really was just his stroller. But needless to say, put that down in the log. I mean, it was good. We actually ended up only hitting three caches, because with a stroller and a son who's a year and a half by yourself, it's kind of hard. It's not bad when me and Jules go out together, because one of us can stay in the car or one of us can push him and stay on the trail. You don't need to get him out every time, but I was finding that every time I would go to a cache, I would have to get him out, which was actually cool. I mean, we ended up having a lot of good time. I mean, we ended up not doing a whole lot of caches. Three caches for us is not a whole lot, but we hung out in a lot of parks. We just, every time we'd find a cache, we'd hang out for, 15, 20, 30 minutes, just mainly because I was trying to find more caches. I was trying to find them on my phone with the information for them. But also, I was trying to give him a little chance to be out instead of, hey, let's put him out of the car and let's get him back in. And then, and then he doesn't like that because he's a year and a half and he doesn't like getting in and out and in and out and in and out. He kind of thinks that's crazy. I want to be out. You're going to get me out of the stroller? Well, let me stay out of the stroller so I can do more stuff. But it was kind of cool. He got to see all the, he got to find the cache and he got to put some of them back, and it was a lot of fun. The second one that we actually found was one, well, I was going for this one first. It was a walk from our hotel. It wasn't too far from our hotel. My wife had the car, so I was stuck. We were in the hotel, me and Micah, and so we decided, well, let's go for a walk. So it actually was a short walk. I mean, it wasn't very far from the hotel, which was nice. We walked past it, and it's in this rock pile, and I was like, oh, a rock pile. I don't want to kind of undo this whole rock wall type thing. But I actually didn't find it right away. I went on to the next one, which is down the road a little bit. I walked across the street, saw that it was in a parking lot, and I said, oh, no, it's an LPC. So what did I do? Well, I walked over to the cache and found it right away and actually got some really funny pictures of Micah beating on that lamp skirt, which was really funny because, it's like, hey, I don't like LPCs. So he's beating on the LPC or on the lamppost skirt, which is really funny. And then I have another picture of him just grabbed my GPS and just started walking. The sad thing about this cache is right behind the lamppost, there was a bush. And I was thinking, guys, come on. You can put don't put it in a lamppost, put it in the bush. So, needless to say, we found that one. While I was waiting there, I decided, man, I can't let this other one beat me. I have to find more than two caches. I know that three isn't a whole lot, but I have to find more than two caches on this trip to Detroit. So I look at the hint for the other cache that we were going to do. It's called Rock Hard Abs. And so I knew it had to be somewhere in the rocks. I knew that it had to be there somewhere in the rocks. So I looked at the clue, and everyone was like, really, really good camouflage, blah, 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 blah. So went back to it, found it, that cache container actually was a fake rock. It had a little triangle on the side of it look kind of like a flag, which is really, really cool. You can actually sell or buy them. The guy that made them is the guy that planted the cash, and they're really cool. And you turn them over, and in the bottom there's a like a little plastic. That's more of like a micro container. You open it up, sign the log, put it back. It was really cool, but I think I attracted more muggles while I was looking for it. While I was looking for it, because I was trying to turn up other rocks and trying to find, oh, hey, what could this fit into? Where is this rock, or where's this cache going to be in this rock? I was looking, actually, for a pill bottle or something like that. I didn't see it. I didn't see anything. So I think I actually probably attracted more muggles as they were just looking at me tear up this rock bed. I was trying to do good. I was trying to, like, look a little bit and then just sit down and not attract too much information or too many muggles, but I don't know. I know I got some. So then that was our caching trip. Well, no. We were actually first before we even tried hunting out this 5-5 cache. That wasn't really a 5-5 cache, and these two fairly easy ones. I saw this whole cluster pop up on my GPS R. So I was like, sweet. I'm gonna go out and find all these. They're fairly close. I drove to it. It was a nice park. I mean, it was a county park. It was a nice park. And so I drove up, and I saw a sign that says, permit required to enter, day permit. I was like, oh, man, I could probably get in there without the permit, probably because there's, like, a trail, but there's also, like, a nature preserve right there. So I was like, well, I better not chance it. You know, I don't want to get a bad name for geocachers or, you know, whatever. So I said, I better not chance it. Let's go to the ranger station. So I went to the nature center. I went in there and said, hey, do I need a permit to get into this park? And they said, yes. And I said, well, okay, that's cool. How much does it cost? You know, hoping myself that it didn't cost anything or a whole lot. I mean, I'm fine with having to go acquire a permit to go in if I don't have to pay for it. It's not even a state park. It's a county park. And so, he said, are you a Wixom, or not Wixom, but whatever the county was. Are you a county resident? I said, no, I'm actually from out of town. He said, well, actually, it's like $18 or something ridiculous. It was like $9 or $18, like something ridiculous for an out-of-state person to come and use the park for a day, especially if I was only going to do geocaching. I wasn't going to pay for myself and my son to go in to this park, into this park and do 5 or 6 geocaches for like $18. That was ridiculous. Here's what I'm saying, guys. Here's my question for the week. What do you guys think about that? Is that cool for people to plant geocaches in a park that you need to pay to get in? They're not planted by the park district, and I realize that some parks have an entrance fee, and I realize that. It's just interesting. A county park that has, like, an $18 registration fee for this permit to get in, is it cool to do that? Give us a shout-out here at 206-3503-GPS. Let us know what you think about that during the week. Or if you're listening to the stream live right now, 724-444-7444-7525 is the TalkCast ID. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 206-3503-GPS. Leave a message there. Let us know what you think about having to pay a ridiculous fee to get into a park just to hunt out a geocache or two. I know we talked about parks planting geocaches and said, hey, come pay to get into our parks. But if it's other users, what do you think about that? Let us know, because I think it's kind of ridiculous. In fact, I didn't go to the park. It was a beautiful park, and I didn't even go in then because I didn't want to pay. So I didn't go in. So what else do we have on the show today? Well, I found a cool site. It's kind of cool. It's another number site. It's not about the numbers. It doesn't really keep track of your stats, per se. It's called CacherStats.com. And what it does is all cachers with 200 cachers or more, it keeps a list, a ranking of them. So you have different categories. You have ranks 1 through 250, 251 through 500, and so on down the line until down to rank 21751 through 22000, and those are the rankings that they rank everybody at. And you can click on Like right now, I'm going to go ahead and click on 1 through 250, which is kind of cool. So I can see right down that I can see they're all listed. The number one geocacher is Team Alamo. Team Alamo. And they have 21,166 finds. They are ranked number one right above CC Cooper Agency with 19,790 caches, which is kind of cool. So I was like, well, where do you guys actually get your stats from? Because I know that geocaching.com doesn't like sharing their information with everybody, which is cool. But I know that they don't. So I was wondering, where does this data come from? Basically, there's a small amount of caches that they consider high-profile caches, which are caches that are hit a lot, and they've been around for a while, and they've got, you know, lots and lots and lots and lots of people are hitting them. So what they do is they download those stats for those caches periodically, and then the information gets pulled from there. So let's say I've not hit one of those high-profile caches. How my name is not going to actually be on this cache list, even though I may have more caches than Team Alamo. I don't. I only have just over 100. But if I did, I'm not even ranked. In fact, I wouldn't be ranked anyways because they don't start even keeping track of you until you've had over 200 finds. But if you've not hit one of these high-profile caches, they don't keep track of you. So I was like, well, what exactly, I'm wondering, is a high-profile cache? And they basically say that it's a cache that's visited regularly, has a large amount of total visits, and the visits are typically successful. So I was wondering, how many caches are there that they're considering high-profile caches? And where can I find one? Like, is there one around me? I know my name wouldn't end up showing up on this list because I'm not over 200, but I wanted to know how many there are and where they're at. Well, I sent them an email and asked them, you know, where are these caches located at? I sent them that email today and haven't received word yet. I will keep you up to date if I get an answer back, but I have not, as of this taping of the show, which is 9 o'clock Tuesday, the 15th of May, it's not March, it's the 15th of May. I haven't gotten an answer back from them on what a high profile, or not a high profile, where the caches are at. So I don't know exactly, but I will keep you guys up to date. I will put it on the show notes, geocachingpodcast.info, when I hear back from them, if I hear back from them. So, what I'm wondering too then is, like, they are pretty good. Like, what if you are on this list and you want to be removed, which I don't really know why you'd want to, because information is all public knowledge anyways. But, you know, you can email them and they will remove your name from the list. So then I was wondering, well, is this list for all the caches or just the caches that are in the United States? And to answer the question, rankings are worldwide, so that's really cool. And then how often does this webpage get updated? Because, you know, I've seen lots of other webpages that start out really, really cool and then end up going really bad because they don't keep their data up to date. What their answer is twice a week, does Tuesday and Friday mornings at 4 a.m. Mountain Time, which is because it captures the bulk of the weekend caches and weekday caches. So basically that you know, twice a week this will get updated. But I'm still kind of leery about the site because I'm wondering where are these caches? Are there only a few, like, in California and in Texas? Are they, like, in every state, and are there lots of them in the state? I mean, I suppose that if you've had more than 200 caches and there are one in every state, you're more likely to hit one of those caches. But like I said, I'm really interested to see what they have to say about that, about what, you know, what they're, where they're getting their data from. So that is an interesting site, and I would definitely check that out if I were you guys. You can also check it out by location. So, like, if I want to see just the top cachers in Indiana, I can do that. I can see that in Indiana, the top cacher right now is Deer Mark, and he has 8,470 right behind Daggy. So I looked down through here, and I see a few people that I know on here, which is cool. Let's see, Spars Hawk and Spars Lady. They've placed a lot of the caches I've found in southern Indiana. I see a couple other different people that are on here that I know. There's a couple people that I know. Team Ticker International. But, so that's pretty cool. You can see in your area, I mean, well, not in your area, but your state, who is the most in your state. So that's kind of cool. I like that idea. My goal, would I like to be on that list? Yeah, I'd like to be number one, but I also have other parts of my life, too, that I do other than just straight geocaching. So it'd be interesting to see how many people that on that list, like especially the top ones, how much time they devote to geocaching. The next thing we want to talk about today, just briefly, is path tags. They're fairly new. They've been around for a little while, but I want to know. I went on their website and was looking, you know, because I've heard all this buzz about path tags and what exactly are path tags. So I went on the site. It's basically just a geocoin, kind of. They're not really trackable. They are trackable, which is cool, but not by geocaching.com, which is still really cool. I like them. I wouldn't mind having them. They're cheaper than a coin. They're thinner than a coin. They're more like a mini coin, and they have a hole on the top of them. So you can put them on a keychain or on a lanyard or hang them on like a pegboard. Their idea is really cool because it's more like anyone you've crossed paths with, not just geocachers. So I could give my Uncle Ben one of these because maybe he doesn't geocache because he doesn't, which is silly. I should get him involved. But he doesn't geocache. I can give him a path tag, and he can collect them even though he doesn't geocache. They are real cool for geocachers, and a lot of them have geocaching logos in the front of them. They are basically like a coin. I mean, they're the same, minted in the same process, and they're painted the same way. They're just a little bit smaller. They have their own serial number on the back of them. To track them, they're at track.pathtags.com. So they have their own path tags log page, and you keep track of all your path tags that you have. Not so much that you come across, but the path tags that you own, that you get from somebody. So, like, I would give you a path tag if I ran across you and liked you, and then you took my path tag. So they're really cool, though. They are about the same size and weight of a U.S. quarter or a Canadian quarter or a one-pound British coin. So they're fairly small and easy to carry in your pocket if you want to. Just don't try to buy a pop with them because the Coke machine really wouldn't like it, but that's okay. On the front side of them is whatever you design, so like a geocoin. And then the backside has a tracking serial number. So it's fairly easy to do. You first create your own path tags, and then you can start collecting and trading. And then you have there's a path tag community that you kind of get to know other people who have path tags. So I was like, I'm wondering, how much are these path tags? Because I know it's huge amount. It's a huge amount to go and buy, have your own coins minted, and all that stuff like that. So I went to the website, and I'm looking, and the Path Tag Starter Kit is really, really cheap. It's $99 for the Starter Kit, which includes Path Tags, and it includes, where did it go? I saw it earlier. It has a Path Tag, and it has a... It comes with four collector's clips. So it's kind of like its own keyring type of a thing. It comes with the custom template setup and 25 path tags and a velvet carrying case. And that's all for $99 plus shipping and handling. So you only get 25 path tags for $100. So it's cheaper, it is cheaper than doing a coin, and then but the refills though then are fairly easy too, because you just email back with your template ID that they give you from before and your refill quantity, and it's a starter kits usually are delivered within 30 days of placing an order. So that's fairly quick compared to coins, from what I've heard. I've never made coins, but I've talked to plenty of people who have. And then about 8 weeks for shipping during holidays or periods of high volume production. So fairly quickly you could have some made for you. So if you're going to the Midwest Geobash, you're probably too late to make them. But if you're going to other big events this summer, Midwest Geobash, you'll probably have them in time for it. Geo Woodstock, you won't have them in time for. Midwest Geobash is in July, and you'll have them hopefully by then. So if you want to do pass tags by then, order your order now. It's only $99, and that way you can get them hopefully by your time if you're going to the Midwest Geobash. If you are, I'm hopefully going to be there, so we should look each other up, and we can hang out a little bit. But more on that later. So, yeah, the pass tags are really cool. Then they also have different stuff you can buy, too. You can get the collector's kit clips. I cannot talk today. Collector's clips for $1.50. Those are sold out right now. And the pass tag pouches, which are sold out right now. Those are for $3.50. It's a little velvet bag that you can keep your pass tags in. I've seen plenty of other different things that you can do. There's display mounts and different stuff. Magnetic mounts are coming soon, too. So they're really cool. They're really like a mini coin. What I don't know if they're really going to sell, because I know that you don't get an icon on geocaching.com, which is kind of down. I know a lot of people who like to collect their icons. I do. I like to collect icons. I was talking to my wife tonight. I said, I wonder how these are actually going to sell. Like, I can't really sell them like I can coins. I mean, I can't buy them and say, okay, I'm going to sell these for $4 a coin and I will break even. I mean, I'd like to, and if you guys want to buy one for like $4 a coin, and that's the way it works out too, and we can make a geocaching podcast one, I would love to do it. If someone wants to help me and donate some money or buy them, let me know. Send us an email, shoot us a voicemail at geocachingpodcast.info, and we can kick those off. We can make some as a community of geocaching podcast listeners. But yeah, I was thinking, I don't know if they're going to sell so much because they don't come with the icon. I mean, you do get to collect them, but they're not quite like them, like coins. So I don't know. Let me know what your opinion is. 206-350-3GPS, or you can send us comment at geocachingpodcast.info and put a comment in and see, let us know what you think about pass tags. So with that, I have a promotion to play for Bass Chaz's podcast.
Hello, fellow cachers. This is Bass Chaz, your host for the Granite State Geocachers Radio Podcast, the podcast all about geocaching in and around the state of New Hampshire and around the world. And I'm inviting you to come join us and this crowd here at gsgcradio.com. There you'll find links to our forum so you can participate, an area to chat, and much more. Email me at gsgcradio@gmail.com. Come join the fun.
Well, that was Fast Chaz's podcast. I encourage you to definitely check that one out. So with that, it's been good talking to you guys tonight. It's been really, really quiet on the live end of this tonight. There's been no one really in here. Next week when DarylW4 and Firefly03 are on, let's see how many people we can actually get in to TalkCast and in the chat and then the live part. So get a TalkCast ID by going to TalkCast.com, signing up for an ID. Like I said, they don't sell your information, so it's completely safe. Go ahead and do that. Call in next week so we can have questions about planting a event cache for those guys from the Cachemaniacs podcast. Thanks again for listening to us tonight, and we enjoy you guys listening to it. And until next week, get out there, go get them, happy caching. Some of the music on the show today was provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.